Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
On today's podcast, the fabulous Adam Richard joins me to begin our new series, Mission Impossible, where we cover all the Mission Impossible movies. My name is Justin Hamilton, and your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to have heaps of fun listening to Big Squid. Thank you for joining me today. I'm very excited to begin this series with Adam. We're going all the way back to the original Mission Impossible film. This is the one that kickstarted not only a franchise, but the crazy lengths that Tom Cruise will go to pull off a stunt. And this is a really fun episode. We have some brand new segments for you. There's a few segments that you'll recognize from like our David Lynch series or from our Space Podyssey episodes. And just a lot of Adam and I laughing over how great these films are. Like, this one is a scorcher. So I hope you're ready, not just for today's eps, but the whole series as we work our way towards Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 coming out later in the year. Before we bring Adam in, I'd like to remind my Adelaide friends that I'll be performing in my hometown as of next week for 5 shows only. That's right, 5, not 6, all 5. In 5 days, I'm in and out. It's my new show, Little Victories. It is appearing at the Rhino Room. And the first show kicks off on the 28th of Feb. And since you're a loyal listener to the podcast, you can score a Big Squid discount by using the promo code PODCAST. Type that in and you'll save yourself some money. So head to justinhamilton.com.au/gigs for more details. That is justinhamilton.com.au/gigs. I also have a Patreon where my subscribers can access bonus podcasts, big discounts to live events, like even bigger than the ones that you just get through this podcast. There's scripts, there's works in progress, there's all sorts of things going on over there. And when you sign up, you also have an episode dedicated to you. And today's shout out goes to Michaela Walsh. I hope you enjoy this episode, Mickey, and maybe even get a little incentive to dig back into the Mission Impossible series. If you'd like to become a Patreon subscriber, head to patreon.com/Justin Hamilton. That's patreon.com/Justin Hamilton. And you will find a tier that suits you. All subscriptions get funneled back into this podcast. It helps keep it in production. So thank you to Mickey and to all of my Patreon subscribers. I'll be back at the end of the podcast to let you know what is coming up next. But for now, let's join US government operative Ethan Hunt as he joins his team and mentor to take on a new assignment for the Impossible Missions Force. This is a professional outfit that always gets their man. But when their latest operation goes spectacularly wrong, it's up to Ethan to discover who betrayed him and his team. Let's get that Tom Cruise running action into full flight as we tackle Mission Impossible.
Good morning, Mr. Phelps. This is your mission, should you choose to accept it. Should you or any member of your IM force be caught or killed, the Secretary will disavow all knowledge of your actions. Ethan Hunt will be your point man, as usual. Good luck, Jim.
Simple game. Is this serious?
Always.
It's much worse than you think.
We're being ambushed. Abort, that's an order.
They knew we were coming. Do you read me?
I don't care how he did it. I want to know why he did it.
You're worried about me.
Why? You survived.
I'm sure we can find something I have that you need.
No one sent me.
These guys are trained to be ghosts. Let's not waste time chasing after him. Just make him come to us. Find something that's personally important to him and you squeeze. Seen me very upset.
This tape will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
Okay. Well, thank goodness. Thank goodness that Mission Impossible is bringing out a new movie this year to give us an excuse to go back over. Is this a guilty secret that you and I share, that our love of these movies? I don't feel guilty about it.
No, I don't feel guilty about it. It's also my weird love of Tom Cruise. Who?
Yes, you do have a weird love, like a proper love. You keep sending me all these text messages saying, look, Jennifer Connelly agrees with me that he deserves to be nominated for Best Actor for Top Gun Maverick.
Look, I watched it again the other day on Paramount Plus, and I cried a lot. I mean, I've cried every time I've seen it. But the scene where Val Kilmer is typing into the computer and he has a little emotion, and I'm like, man, this guy's crying at a Word doc. Like, this is hard work.
Right. Isn't it because he's dyslexic and he's crying because he can't read it? Is that what's happening?
You can't be dyslexic and be a fighter pilot. You've got to do a lot of maths.
Yeah, right. No, that's a good point. That is a good point. But these movies are one of my favorites to see with you and to share with everyone listening. When Adam and I go to the cinema to watch it, we try to pick the moments where the actor realizes they're not using CGI. He really is going to ram this helicopter into a mountain. It was particularly fun with Henry Cavill.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's because I guess a lot of the actors these days, someone like Henry Cavill, who I think did all of Man of Steel just in a closet somewhere, a green closet.
Yeah.
And Zack Snyder built the movie around him.
Yeah.
also had that weird mustache thing going on when Joss Whedon took over.
Yeah.
That Tom Cruise is like, CGI? Nah, we won't be doing that.
Yeah. And then there's the moment that Henry Cavill discovers it, and it's you can see it all on the screen.
Yeah. It's like in his eyes, like, what? Are you acting? Okay.
So for this series, we're going to cover all the Mission Impossible movies in the lead up to the new film. So this will be Mission Impossible. It sounds like the name that we should give this. I've brought over some of the segments from Space Podyssey, but I've got some new segments for us. But I always like to begin these episodes with, when did you first see this film?
I saw it when it came out in the cinema. I was like, Mission Impossible, you know, it's a fairly daggy TV show, you know. Yeah. It was the NCIS of its day. It just kept running. They changed the entire cast 3 times and revived it in the 80s. We filmed in Brisbane and then I think, well, maybe Hollywood on the Gold Coast. And then in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I was like, oh yeah, Mission Impossible, that'll be fun. Tom Cruise is always fun. But when I found out it was directed by Brian De Palma, one of my favorite directors, I was like, oh, no, I'm sold. Yeah. And I went to a Saturday night session and the only seats we could get were like third from the front.
Right.
So me and my friend Claire, I remember, like, practically lying down to watch the movie because we were so close. Like, they don't put the seats that close to the front anymore. Like,
no.
There's a decent whack, but in the old days.
It's like when you go to the Ritz Cinema. Like, I went to see In the Mood for Love, which was a movie I'd never seen before, and the only seats were, that were available were right at the front, and I chose to go and sit in the balcony because they are those old-school front-row seats where you would it'd be the equivalent of just sitting too close to your TV and only watching a quarter of it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I remember, I distinctly remember sitting, like at a 90-degree angle to watch the film.
So funny. Well, I've got something funny for you. I literally have no memory of seeing this film other than I know I've seen it because even though I'd forgotten about Emilio Estevez and Kristen Scott Thomas, which we'll talk about later, I'd also forgotten that Ving Rhames was in it from the beginning. But I have seen it and I remembered most of the film and I just cannot pinpoint where I saw it. I feel like I must have seen it at the cinema. But other than that, I can't pinpoint it, which is really strange for me.
Yeah. And I forgot how young Tom Cruise was in it. Like, I've always really thought of, young. You know, Mission Impossible as something he did when he was older.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he's not that old.
No, no, you're right. You're completely right. He looks so young. We will get into Tom Cruise in a sec. New segment for Mission Impossible. Stamp that passport. So this film, which of these locations have you visited? Have you ever been to the Czech Republic?
I have not, but it looks beautiful. I had a masseuse who was from the Czech Republic and he used to tell me all sorts of amazing stories about the place. He moved to Adelaide, so, you know. He's maybe I should go and get a massage from him there.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Should have done it when you came to my 50th.
I should have.
Snuck in.
But yeah, he was lovely. He used to tell me all sorts of stuff. And I think because I was, I think when I was seeing him, I was doing someone's topic on Hard Quiz but that I was writing for was The Witcher, which is, you know, a lot of Eastern European kind of stories and but yeah it's a Czech author so I've never been but I am fascinated by it and it looks incredible on screen
this movie's stunning and the Czech Republic is a big reason for that. Of course you've been to the UK.
We've
both been to USA but I have not been to Virginia and Illinois. Have you?
No, I've only been to Los Angeles.
Los Angeles. All right. So this is the segment, The Year in Action. So to give us an idea of where Mission Impossible 1 lands, these are some of the movies that came out. Eraser with Arnold Schwarzenegger, Vanessa Williams, James Caan and James Coburn.
I remember that. That was, the waning years of Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Was that after Batman and Robin or around the time?
It's getting close, isn't it? It's got to be around that time. I reckon it's a little bit before, isn't it? I think. But yeah, we're getting close.
Yeah, maybe.
We've got The Rock.
It's around the time of like, The Rock. What a great film.
Yeah, Sean Connery, Nicolas Cage and Ed Harris. Sorry, what were you going to say about Schwarzenegger before I interrupted you?
It was just the period where because he could do no wrong for about 5 or 6 years. Comedy, action, whatever it was, everything Arnold did was amazing. And Eraser was one of those films where it's like, not that one.
Not that one. No, not that one. Whereas The Rock is a classic action film.
It's a Bruckheimer special. It's got it's got an amazing Diane Warren song, as they all do.
Yeah.
But I think that one is How Do I Live?
Right.
Trisha Yarwood, which is, you know. Yeah, when you get to the big Diane Warren song at the end of a Bruckheimer movie, you're like, "Yep, I'm here for it."
Thank you. We also have Broken Arrow with John Travolta and Christian Slater.
Oh, I remember that being. Was it a John Woo?
I don't know. Let me look that up. But I remember seeing that and thinking it was fine, right?
Yeah, I remember it like getting like a
John Woo.
It was kind of like meant. Was John Woo?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember it being like, oh, it's, you know, this is Americans doing Hong Kong action.
Yeah. Yeah.
And weird that we bring up John Woo because he will turn up in this podcast very soon.
Very soon. We also had The Long Kiss Goodnight with Gina Davis and Samuel L. Jackson.
Which I wanted to love and yeah. It was difficult.
It was difficult. And I wanted to love it because of both of them. It felt like a good amalgamation, right?
Yeah, and I liked Rennie Harlan. Like, you know, I thought it was a bit cheesy, sort of proto Michael Bay, but
yeah.
yeah, it was just a bit meh.
And a movie that I left till last because there's a mild parallel to it is Executive Decision with Kurt Russell, Halle Berry, and Steven Seagal. And there is a parallel with that because that's the movie where Seagal's trying to get from one plane to the other and the thing just disappears and suddenly he's no longer in the film. And you go, what just happened? Don't get me wrong. I thank you, but also what? And that happens in this film.
It does.
Yeah.
I think that was like Steven Seagal was trying to, you know, get out of his cheesy Steven Seagal movies.
Yeah.
And the only way was if they killed him off halfway through the movie.
Yeah. Well, 30 minutes in, isn't it? So he doesn't get too far in. No. So a segment, All-Star Guest Stars. So in this film we have, it's pretty big. It's John Voight.
Oh, my God.
Ving Rhames. Chock-a-block.
John Voight is like a main character.
Yes. Ving Rhames, just you can see why he's stuck around all this time. But
this was only like his second film, wasn't it? Like this was like on the back of Pulp Fiction. Like he was slotted into this as like, oh yeah, he's the next big thing, grab him.
Yeah, he is. He's an interesting actor because he's super charismatic, and. Mm-hmm. You know, he's kind of a little bit effortless, but he also seems to have, I don't know, like it feels like they should have done more with him.
Mm. You know what I did like in this is that he's such a menacing, terrifying character in Pulp Fiction. So seeing as this is the first time you see him out of that,
yeah,
and he's kind of, you know, a little bit reticent. He's a bit afraid. Like,
yeah.
He's constantly playing second fiddle to Tom Cruise,
yeah.
Which you would, even though he's like three times the size of Tom Cruise. It's like, no,
I know.
You be the boss.
I've looked up his IMDb for you. It's quite long before he gets to Pulp Fiction. He's in two episodes of Miami Vice. He's in an episode of Spencer for Hire. He's in
I loved that show.
Yes. He's in Casualties of War. And then he's in Jacob's Ladder.
And
Stop or My Mum Will Shoot. I can't believe nobody remembers
that. So just
kind
of bit
that.
Parts, I'm guessing.
Yeah. And then I think it's like Pulp Fiction where it's like suddenly, wait a minute, what's going on here? And then you get him in Mission Impossible and... I'm a big fan of him in Out of Sight as well. He's fantastic in that.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
Yeah. So you have Ving Rhames, Vanessa Redgrave, who's just magnificent.
And loving every minute of it as well.
It's
almost like they've called her and gone, we want you to play this character. She doesn't get out of a chair. I'm just like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, great. Yeah. And I get paid. Jean Reno is in it, and
also he was kind of like, hadn't he just come off the back of The Professional, so it was only kind of big in France up until then.
Yeah, I think so.
So it's almost like, you know, this is a big blockbuster action movie, and they've gone, let's grab some art house stars,
yes,
and thrust them into the big limelight. And you know, Jean Reno has now turned up in thousands of terrible, terrible action movies.
Yes.
Playing thankless little parts.
Oh, man. That is so true. That is so true. We also get Kristen Scott Thomas, Emilio Estevez, Emmanuel Biet, and Henry Zerny. I would count Henry Zerny as...
Oh, I love Henry Zerny. Like, I feel like this is the perfect Henry Zerny role. He was in the TV show Revenge.
right.
which she was very good in, which was okay for a season or two and then fell off the rails. But yeah, and married to Madeline Stowe, whose face was having some issues clearly. But I love Henry Zerner. He always plays this kind of character. Like he's always kind of the, you know, the pencil pushing, officious admin guy.
Yeah. I wonder if he goes for auditions and goes, yep, here we go again. All right. Good to go.
Am I an accountant who's made good? Sure.
Yeah. So it's a big cast, and here's a new segment for us as well. Cruising around the mission, movies Tom Cruise made before and after each Mission Impossible movie. So so in 93, he makes The Firm. In 94, he makes Interview with the Vampire.
Oh, yes. Interesting.
And then in 1996, he pulls out Mission Impossible and Jerry Maguire. So
Jerry Maguire.
That's all in the same year.
Because after Interview with a Vampire, which I think everyone went, what is this? This is not your role.
No.
He's gone, all right, I'm going to have to double down on the cruiseness.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's interesting because then in 98, he's just a producer on an American bio sports film called Without Limits. But then, so he does these two, does Mission Impossible and Jerry Maguire in 96. He doesn't have any other movies come out until 99. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it is the 1-2 of Magnolia and Eyes Wide Shut. So it's, so it's like he goes blockbuster Mission Impossible.
Is that
because
he was filming Eyes Wide Shut?
Because he was filming that movie for 19 years.
Like, it went for a really long time, that shoot, didn't it?
Like, it was a year, wasn't it? Like, didn't Kubrick keep Cruise and Nicole Kidman locked in in a sound studio for a year?
Yeah, they kept having to pretend to have sex.
Oh, my God. Well, no wonder it took so long. But the... But
I read a really interesting story about Eyes Wide Shut the other day that Todd Field, the director of, is it Tar? Is that the name of that movie with
Cate Blanchett?
So he's an actor in that, and he wanted to be a director. So he spent all of his time following around Stanley Kubrick, and Tom Cruise sat him down and was like, "You're going to be amazing," and just, you know, gave his whole Tom Cruise super positive. You're going to be the best person who ever lived. This is amazing. I'm really looking forward to it. To the point where his first film, Todd Field's first film in the bedroom, apparently Harvey Weinstein got his hands on it and cut it, and it was terrible. Yeah. And Tom Cruise set him down and said, look, this is what you're going to do. It's going to take 6 months. It's going to be painful. You're going to let him cut it, and then they're going to test it, and you're going to say, after it tests badly, remember the cut that I gave you that tested well before you cut it. Let's go back to that. And he's like, just hold your nerve. It'll be fine. And I was like, oh my God, like Todd Field, like this amazing director getting this advice from Tom Cruise. And like, you just go, because I remember another story about Tom Cruise talking to, like, I think it was Zac Efron. He goes, have you ever ridden a motorbike? He goes, no. He goes, oh, we're going to ride motorbikes. And so then he took Zac Efron out to ride motorbikes. And you keep waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, when is the weird thing going to happen? And it's just like, no, I think he's just super positive. Like, I think that is all there is to him. He's just super positive.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, he's very, you know, action oriented.
Yeah. Yeah. He just does something and then it's, there's nothing else going on.
Yeah. Like, you think there's an ulterior motive. It's like, no, I'm just nice. I'm like, what?
Yeah. I don't think he's great in this film. I think he's fine.
No.
But
He's a star, but he's not, the film's not really asking to do much. I think this is also a problem. Hang on, I'm just going to move this. I think this is also a problem for De Palma in general, where I think he kind of lets the actors do whatever they feel like doing. Like, I don't get the impression that he's that hands-on an acting director. Because I've seen some of his films where it's like, what is that guy doing? Whereas, you know, the construction of the film, the shots, the tension is really good at building tension and terror. But yeah, just sometimes there's performances in De Palma films where you're like, is Brian even watching the dailies of this? Does he even care that there are actors in this film?
Yeah, he should really reconnect with what's going on.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen The Black Dahlia, but there are some strange performances in that film.
Right, no, I have not seen that film, but I have heard that as well. So, well, let's get into this. What do you think of the opening scene where the IMF team successfully conduct their mission?
Oh, it's so brief and so, like, it just, it's like, this is what happened every week in that TV show. And we've managed to do it in 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, it's great. Spent an hour setting that stuff up. And, you know, it was Martin Landau would have the plastic face on. And then later on it was Leonard Nimoy when Martin Landau and his wife argued over their contracts and left. And here it's Tom Cruise with the plastic face on.
Looking like he's about to walk on for a SNL skit.
Oh my God, it's so funny. I got a giant big cigar and I am a Russian.
Yeah, it's so funny because as soon as you see him, you go, that's Tom Cruise. How did this guy who's getting taken for a ride have no idea that that's Ethan Hunt? But he didn't. But it's such a perfect opening to the film because you see the team, you see that they're really good at their job. You get the impression this is how they work all the time and you just get lulled into that beautiful false sense of security. Okay, can't wait to see what they do next.
Yeah, and also first appearance of Chekhov's rubber face.
Yes.
As opposed to Chekhov's gun.
Yeah. It's great. It's great. And you're completely right. It's seven seasons of the TV series rolled into 3 minutes and we're away.
It's like, good. This is what happens in this show. Yeah. Now we're going to fuck with it. Yeah.
So in this early part of the film, what trope do you find the most entertaining? The moment where Estevez is waiting for a file to upload successfully, one of my favorites. God. Or the part where Tom Cruise pretends to be a human being who can joke around with other people.
It is a weird scene. It's like he's someone sent him a videotape of a focus group where some joker is mucking around and he's gone, I'll use that. That's my character.
Yep.
I'm just everyone's pal, but just it just doesn't seem natural for him to be undermining at all. Like, because he's such a leader.
Yeah.
Like he's always, and he does spend the rest of the film leading. But I guess in this instance, you know, you've got John Voight is the leader. So he's like, oh well, I can be the mucking around one. It's like, no, that's not.
It's so funny because it is, I honestly think this is, there's a couple of moments where you're like, oh, Cruise is not comfortable with this. And for starters, because I think his true emotions are coming through, like he's sitting there going, John Voight, what's he done in the last 10 years? And he's looking at Emilio Estevez and thinking, he was in the Brat Pack. No one had me in the Brat Pack. Fuck this guy. Like, anyway, look at me. I'm having a good time. Everyone's having a good time, aren't they? Yeah, we're having a good time.
Tom's like, I made a movie with his brother.
Yeah. It's a really funny scene. But otherwise, the old school, you know, the file, it's like, come on. And you're watching it.
Oh, my God.
Hey, make sure that file uploads. Come on. It's so great because they're not doing anything.
Do you know what else I thought was weird was, and this is a totally just off the wall observation, is because they're like, oh, it's the internet, it's the future. And the internet was around at the time.
Yeah.
And like for some reason, the graphic designer on this thought that the internet was all going to be in capital letters. And I'm like, no. Yeah.
Why is the internet yelling at them?
Why are all their interfaces screaming?
Yeah. I did notice that far out. It's so funny.
It's like, calm down, internet.
Yeah. Well, it's the internet's talking like a child. It's just demanding attention at any given moment. The team are sent to Prague to stop a rogue agent from stealing the CIA list of agents who are undercover, yet the mission
unexpectedly,
the knock list
it's the knock list.
Yeah, we've all been on it.
Like, I feel like, you know, this script, and I love both the screenwriters, but I feel like this script is one step away from being Carry On Mission.
Oh, I know. There's the knock list. There's the knocked up list. There's the knocked over list. All the knocks.
Oh, the knock knock list. The knockers list.
So I can imagine if they got the wrong one.
And they keep saying knock list, and I'm like, stop saying knock list.
Yeah, I know. It's really funny. So the team go undercover, and they get to do this mission, but it fails, and it leaves Ethan Hunt as the only survivor. Do you remember what your reaction was on the first watch?
I was like, what, they killed Emilio?
But I know. I was
he was a big...
Big star.
He was a big deal at the time. Yes. Like, he was a headline star. So it was I didn't even know Emilio was in this. How exciting. Kristen Scott Thomas. Was this possibly around the time of The English Patient? Like, possibly, she would have been, you know, quite a big deal back then. And it was like, oh, this is great. What a great team. Oh, no, the team's gone now.
it's crazy. Like, but specifically Emilio Estevez, because also really good direction from De Palma in that. He feels like he's in it. Like, there's nothing about the way he's directed or his performance or the way that it's written that he's not going to be there at the end credits. And it's a genuine shock.
All of them feel like that. Like, even the French woman who has one line and wears the glasses and like, they all say it feels like a really, you know, and I guess that's what that scene with Tom laughing and joking around is meant to make us feel like, oh, yeah, there are, you know, they've been a crew for ages. They're just getting on with their jobs. Also, John Voight, the apparent end of John Voight after, you know, and we thought he was going to die from smoking on a plane.
Oh, well, that's, I thought this guy's done. This guy's cooked. So much easier to get those IMF messages that, you know, combust and turn into flame when you could smoke on a plane as well. So then you can, oh, no, it's just my cigarette.
I can't believe you could smoke on a plane in the late 90s. This is blowing my mind.
What was great was there was one section that you could smoke in. There was a section that you couldn't smoke in. And guess what that section was? The section that you could smoke in. It's a plane. It's not staying on an invisible border. It's so funny. It's so funny.
So weird.
Normally it's technology that blows your mind, you know, when you look at it in a movie. Yes. But this one was literally smoking on the plane and going, that was a thing. That was a genuine thing.
That was a thing people did.
So then Ethan Hunt, who is the only survivor, is debriefed by the IMF director and realizes there was another IMF team in on the job, which is great because when you're watching it, you do see people looking around weirdly. Like, it's all there in the periphery. So when you discover there is another IMF team, it's not a shock. They haven't cheated you.
No.
If you were looking around, there were people watching them.
And because I'd seen this a few times, like I'd forgotten, because so many times lately they've done this kind of thing in a film where they'll show flashbacks and the flashbacks are not the scenes we saw.
Yes.
The flashbacks are something else. It's been edited in such a way, like, you know, it's done really well in the Rian Johnson,
Knives Out,
Benoit Blanc movies. The next time you see it, like, it's a different angle, it's a different edit. So, well,
I have to say, I was literally about to mention that I, on first watch of Glass Onion, spoilers for anyone who still hasn't gotten around to seeing it, I saw Edward Norton swap the glasses over for David Bautista. I saw it the first time and I was like, what the? And next minute, choke. Bye bye, Bautista.
This is like, because I knew that there was the other team. I remembered that from the last time I'd seen it, because I watched this fairly regularly. This is one of those films I go to where I'm like, I might watch Mission Impossible again. and just, you know, you see the guy with the tray behind the woman with the glasses. You see the couple on the riverbank. Like, they're not hiding it from you. It's there in plain sight. It's just that, you know, everything else is drawing your attention away from them. It's really good sleight of hand.
Like, yeah.
It's great direction. It's great cinematography.
Yeah, it's great. I totally agree. I love it. It turns out the whole mission was a setup to lure out a mole within the IMF, and now Ethan Hunt is the main suspect. So to get away, Hunt blows up a lobster tank in the restaurant to make his escape.
And the whole front wall of the restaurant is a lobster tank.
Well, that's my question for you. Regarding the amount of water that gushes out, how big was that fucking lobster tank? It's massive. It's like huge. he blows up a swimming pool.
But I remember as he's walking to meet Henry Zerny in that restaurant and you see like just a wall of water above, I'm like, oh, this bit. Yeah. I'm all excited.
It's a great scene.
It's so good. It's just a great set piece. It's so much fun. And you go, well, they could have only done one take of that because he's running away from water. Not as terrifying as Jake Gyllenhaal running away from Frost.
I have more on that in the squid bits for the end of the podcast. So it's a hell of a shot to get as a one-off, right?
And you get the feeling that this is where the crazy Mission Impossible giant set pieces is starting to happen. It's like, oh, yeah, we'll do this for real.
Yeah. Is there a part of Tom Cruise who, when he rewatches this movie, thinks, oh, why didn't we just film on the back of a train? Why didn't Jean Reno actually fly a helicopter down through the tunnel? God, this movie.
I mean, to their credit, they did use miniatures as opposed to fully CGI. Like, I think there's one CGI train, which is really a bit on the nose, and there's a CGI knife that made me go, ugh. But miniatures is also hard work. Like, that's not an easy shoot.
Yeah, it's great. So Ethan Hunt returns to the safe house after he manages to run away from the exploding lobster tank and deduces that the elusive Max, who was working on job 314, refers to the Bible verse Job 3:14. What is more impressive, Hunt's smarts, or that when he checks the internet for possible connections, it gives him a list of only 126?
Well, he's looking at Usenet groups.
Right.
So once you've filtered out all the kiddie porn, like that's probably, probably 126 left on Usenet.
Yeah, probably even in 2023, right?
Yeah.
It's a good scene though, and it's fun watching Ethan have to try and work out what's going on.
Oh, my God. And the weird interfaces for those Usenet Bible study groups. Like, I don't understand what's going on with them at all.
And just firing off messages. Like, you know, we remember the internet back in 1996. That's a quick montage. That's 36 hours of him sending emails.
Yeah. Well, he does get quite tired. He starts to nod off.
They cut out all the bits where the internet drops out and he has to reconnect. They've cut out all the bits where he's listening to that very specific noise. So it turns out that Claire, the wife of John Voight's Jim Phelps, managed to survive after her husband warned that they were compromised. What do you think of Emmanuel Beert in this film?
I did not like her.
There's something just like she's fine, but there's just something missing. There's a lack of charisma or something.
You know what I think the thing is? The script keeps telling us that everyone desires her, but she has no actual personality.
Yeah.
Like, and it was a huge problem in a lot of scripts at the time where, and you know, I think even today, like when, you know, they try to make a character amazing and everyone loves her and she's incredible. And it's like, why don't you just make her that character? Like, show, don't tell.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. Yeah. It's like everyone's, you know, meant to think that she is the apple of everyone's eye. And you're like, why? Like, you know.
She's boring. Like, yeah. She's a pout. She's a pout with a power suit on.
Yeah, well, she doesn't get to do enough in the lead up in those first couple of missions as well. Like,
no.
there's so much build up with Scott Thomas and Estevez that you know, maybe if we'd seen her being you know, at the party, a little bit flirty, and guys just meeting her, falling all over or something, you know. But
yeah, something. But also, she's, I don't think she's bringing much to the table either. Like,
no,
because she's in most of the film.
Yeah,
and most of the time, you know, you don't remember if she was in the room or a chair was. Like, it's right. Like Ving Rhames and Jean Reno, you remember them being in a scene. And I, like, as the movie went on, I went, oh, I forgot she was also one of the firemen.
Yeah.
You know, I just forgot about her. Like, I knew she was there as a concept. It's almost like she's the MacGuffin.
Yes, yes. And I think it's one of those things that they rectify, especially with Rebecca Ferguson in later films, who's so good. But anyway, we'll get to those a little bit later. So Ethan Hunt contacts Max, who's played by Vanessa Redgrave, to let her know the list is a fake, but he can get the real one for the price of $10 million. He wants $10 million for the real list, and he wants to know Job's identity. Just between you and me, is Redgrave the best part of this film?
Oh, yeah. She's just enjoying herself so much. Like, she's just saying, of course. Yeah. She's wonderful. And just, like, the way she calls him dear boy.
Yeah.
Kind of almost flirting with him.
Yes. Older lady flirting is fantastic.
Yeah. And you just get the impression she is completely amoral. Like,
yes.
And there's nothing... Like, there's nothing really kind of script-based to kind of really oversell that, but she just, you just go, she would sell her own sister for, you know, whatever it took. Like, she's, and she looks amazing. Like, her outfits are spectacular.
Yeah.
And I love that she's never standing up. Like, she's always, she's in a chair in the office, she's in the back of a car, she's in a train seat. Like, she never has to stand up. She doesn't even have to walk anywhere.
Yeah. Must have been in the contract. And what a good thing to insist upon. The I reckon it's funny, you know, you and I have talked about this in the past, just amongst ourselves, about how Brad Pitt is a great supporting actor and a great reactor, and if like you watch one of his movies that isn't great, like Troy, but his scene with Peter O'Toole is really well acted.
And amazing.
Cruz is the opposite in this. I don't think he's very, he can't keep up with her. And there's one point in the back of the car when he's trying to be cool, and I honestly think he looks deranged. Like, he looks like he's washed down a double nectar, two caffeine pills with a Red Bull, and had a Coke just to, you know, knock the edge off. It's the bit of the
very high energy.
It's the part of the film that I'm glad it's not in 3D, because I would have been terrified to see Cruz's head coming at me. It's too much. So Ethan Hunt has to recruit a new team for his new mission that includes two disavowed IMF agents played by Ving Rhames and Jean Reno. They infiltrate the CIA headquarters in Langley, and this is where we get the famous scene of Cruz being lowered into a room that he can't make any noise in, can't touch the floor or have his body temperature rise too much, or it will set off the alarms. This is one of the first big Mission Impossible scenes, and how do you think it holds up in 2023?
I think it's still great. I mean, even though it's been parodied a billion times, like, so we've seen it like so many times, like, it just became shorthand for spy movies. It's like, oh, we're just gonna lower a Muppet into a room. But I think it's still a really good scene. It's really tense. It's you know, the guy coming in and throwing up and then going out again, like, you know. That's another, like, I forgot that it was Claire that poisoned that guy's drink. And I'm like, oh.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found.
LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
My God, she's even boring when she's pretending to be someone else.
Yes, I know. Well, you know why the guy's... like, normally you would think, oh, he's sitting way too close to her. But the reason he can sit so close to her is because she's a void. He doesn't even know that she's there.
Yeah. Pretending to do a shorthand.
Yeah. It's a fun scene. It's really fun.
Yeah, it's really great. And then, you know, just when you think it's not tense enough, there's the mouse in the duct.
Yeah. Of all the things, Renault, it's a classic trope, isn't it? The big tough guy who sees something small and can't cope with it.
But yeah, it's just a great set piece. And you know, if this was the only good scene in the entire film, like if the rest of it was a steaming turd, I'd be like, it's still good. Like this film's good because of this one bit. Like it kind of makes the film. It's the bit you remember. You're like, oh yes, Tom Cruise hanging down. And also, if you've done anything, you know, if you've been hanging in the air at any point, you know what a ridiculous amount of core work that it takes to like, he's not hanging there. Like, if he was hanging there, he'd be swinging around all over the place. Like,
yeah. It's funny because it's such a good scene, but the look on his face is so hilarious because there is something inherently insane about not touching the floor and the way he's not touching floor. And
the floor is lava again.
Right. And, you know, the thing is that you've said it's been, you know, parodied so many times. Ben Stiller did such a good job of doing the parody of it. When Cruise is pulling that face, I can see Ben Stiller's face. But I tell you what it has. It has one of my other favorite movie tropes, which is the guy watching everything on a monitor, panicking when things go awry, but then relieved when it's fine. And it's just like, and it's just, there's nothing else for them to do except sit and sweat.
You've got to love the character that tells the audience how to feel.
Mate, there's a really funny scene in Ocean's 11 where it's Brad Pitt and George Clooney who are doing that. And it's funny because they're way too overqualified to be the two guys watching things on a monitor. And also, I love both those guys, but I reckon they're giving us 30%. They're not giving us the full Clooney Pitt experience in that scene.
No. Yeah, so, because then you wouldn't, it'd suck all the tension out of it because they wouldn't actually be paying attention.
Yeah, I'd be like, why are we going back to that guy? I want to just keep watching those two, watch the monitor. So the team managed to get everything out of there. Just also, how blessed is it to see floppy disks as the way to get information out?
So hilarious. Like, so hilarious.
having to put the right one in, hold it between
the
teeth.
Copy the information across. I mean, look, it was no Gwyneth Paltrow trying to get everything off
the USB in Iron Man.
Jeff Bridges' hard drive. But still, it was a very nervous moment.
Weirdly, my favorite scene in Iron Man.
Yeah, it's such a good scene. Like, it shouldn't make sense. Like, it shouldn't be as tense as it is, but it just is, and it's really well. Like, I think it's, that one's all in the performances.
Oh, yeah. Jeff Bridges is one of my favorites, and I'm not afraid to admit it. I'm a big fan of Gwyneth Paltrow's acting.
Oh, I love Gwyneth. I think she's a great actor.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to get a vagina candle, but, you know, as an actor, I think she's quite good.
I'm a candle for his own. just in case, though I accidentally got that one. So the team goes back into hiding in the UK, and Jean Reno decides he's going to leave with the information. He's going to leave with the disc, Adam. But Ethan Hunt does a magic trick with the floppy disc to trick Reno into giving the proper disc to him. And I've got to ask you, was this acting, or does Tom Cruise know magic tricks and he just does this all the time?
I don't know. I feel like if it was in the script, he would have, you know, we know Tom Cruise. He would have gone on a six-week intensive course, secretly headlined at Vegas instead of David Copperfield one night.
Yes, in the Mission Impossible makeup.
Yeah, in the rubber face.
Everyone's sitting there going, I paid for David Copperfield, but I reckon that's Tom Cruise in a rubber makeup.
Tom Cruise in a rubber face. Mask. But he's doing well. Because you know what he's like? He's just like, well, I'll learn how to do it. Like, I'll just learn. I'll learn that thing.
It's such a funny scene. I feel like, do you feel
ridiculous.
Like in a previous life, Tom Cruise was a magician? Like, he feels like he's got some magician energy, doesn't he?
He's not that annoying. I've been trying to explain to Gary about the weird hierarchy of performing arts.
Yeah.
You know, jugglers are at the bottom.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And magicians are just jugglers who know more than one trick.
Yeah. Tough time for jugglers.
Which is ironic, given that all we do as comedians is just stand there and talk shit.
Yeah.
Like, these people have skills and we're rubbishing them because, like, no, they're no good.
They're not
because good. They learned something, and it's better if you just turn up and hope for the best.
Yeah, well, there's, you know what it is. It's like if you're going to put that much effort into something, why don't you like become an engineer?
Yeah, do something useful.
Yeah,
we know we're not useful. We have no transferable skills.
Yeah, I always suspected it, and then when it came to the first lockdown, and I thought maybe now that my industry doesn't exist, I need to get a job, and then I realized. Oh, I'm not qualified for anything. Like, I was looking at jugglers and going, God damn it, those guys are ahead of me now.
Why do you think I went back to uni during the lockdown?
makes so much sense.
Learn a new skill.
So Ethan Hunt manages to see on the news that his family's been arrested. That's a... like slow news date
when drug smuggling. Yes,
Ethan Hunt's family ends up on on worldwide news. He deliberately makes a phone call from a payphone to the IMF, which he knows is going to alert them to where he is. And then, just as he's getting back to the safe house with Ving Rhames, the chair. And the proper floppy disk. I can't call her Claire anymore. She's going to be Chair Claire. Jim Phelps resurfaces and reveals how he survived the shooting. John Voight in this film. Survived what do you think shooting. Of John Voight?
Well, I think it's a bold move to do with the character of Jim Phelps, who's the only character name used from the original series that was
I find it a bit strange, right?
Yeah, because, you know, like, because there'd been so many of these kind of TV movies or TV shows from the 60s and 70s turned into movies. Like, this was a thing that was going on in the
90s. Yeah.
You know, you had the Flintstones and the Brady Bunch and it was all happening. But this was, so this is the name, like, Peter Graves, you know, our favorite pilot from Flying High / Airplane, Captain Over.
Do you like Gladiator movies?
So he played Jim Phelps. It was so weird for Jim Phelps, the character, to have been dispatched so early. I'm like, oh, they've just killed off the whole TV show. What's going on? Because it was exciting, you know, like John Voight, Oscar winner. Did he win an Oscar or is he just nominated? For Midnight Cowboy.
Oh, I'm not sure. I'll look that up.
Anyway, John Voight, you know, respected actor and father of Angelina Jolie and now right-wing nut job. John Voight playing, you know, this legacy character from the TV show is dead. And then it's like, oh, no, he's not dead. And I think this is a really, again, another really well shot scene where the last time we saw him, he was in that trench coat and we see him pick the trench coat up. And then we just see the trench coat behind Tom Cruise for the entire phone call.
Yeah.
So when he turns around, it's like, you knew who that was. Like, it's not a surprise, but it's like, no, we gave you all the visual clues so that when he turned around, you would go, oh, he's still alive.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. I love it.
Yeah. And what about his heel turn?
Oh, amazing. It's because you kind of they kind of make it go right to the end of the film. Like, it's almost like you think, is he, isn't he, is it someone else, is it, you know,
is it a triple Tom cross?
Tom knows, but then Tom's kind of like being circumspect about it, and so we're still like in a, maybe he hasn't gone bad, but it's looking like he's the only one.
So it's and I say this as a compliment, it's a very confusing ending because you're not quite sure exactly where you need to land in a lot of the situation. FYI, John Voight was nominated for Midnight at Cowboy along with Dustin Hoffman, but didn't win. But the film won Best Picture and Best Director.
He should have won Best Actor for being vomited out of a snake in Anaconda. That was that was some amazing work.
Underrated.
Doing the weird Panamanian accent the whole time. Danger is a side, and isn't it, Gary? Now, there's a film with an amazing cast. Jennifer Lopez, Ice Cube, Owen Wilson, Eric Stoltz, John Voight.
Directed by James Cameron, right?
Anaconda, no. Oh. No.
Or did he do the sequel? Doesn't James Cameron have weird...
James Cameron did Piranha 2.
Oh, Piranha 2.
The Flying Piranha.
Right. One of three films he made that didn't make $1 billion. So,
And I saw today, what's her face? Zoe Saldana now has been in four films that made over $2 billion.
Like, she's had a hell of a career and a little bit underrated, I reckon, because she's good at everything.
I think she's the glue.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's the glue in every film where you go, oh, it's just missing something. It was like Zoe Saldana.
Yeah. There we go. We're back. Well, Ethan Hunt knows that Phelps is really the mole because he discovered that the Bible in Prague was taken from Chicago's Drake Hotel where Phelps was previously on assignment.
They made fun of him. They made the big joke about him getting the cushy cushions. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was, you know, so I made fun of Ethan Hunt for looking like he was trying to be a good guy, just making jokes. But in his defense, he might not know how to hang out with people, but he definitely knows how to recall information.
Yep. And sell a plot point.
So Ethan Hunt sets up Phelps, Max, and the IMF to converge on the London train to Paris to blow everyone's cover. And a lot of good fun fights. Phelps kills his chair wife, Claire, which is – he just turns on her very quickly, doesn't he? He's just like –
I know. But I love the moment we find out, like, where Tom Cruise has to know for sure whether Claire is involved or not.
Yeah.
So he employs Chekhov's rubber mask for the final time.
Yes. I'm a big fan of the mask. If I see a Mission Impossible film and there's no mask, it's a little bit like seeing a superhero film without a cape.
It's like seeing a James Bond film and there's not, you know, at least one bow tie. Like, you need,
it's like, what are you doing?
Like, come on, give me a martini and a bow tie. Like, even if it's for 30 seconds, like I just need one mask, Mission Impossible. Even if it's just like briefly at the start or you just got one nailed to the wall. It's like, oh, yeah, that's my trophy mask. Like, just I need a mask.
Yeah. Yeah. I just for no real reason. He goes and gets a coffee and then he comes back and he says, oh, just trying out the new masks. It's great. Yeah,
just even if that's all it is.
Yeah. No, I'm a big fan of that as well. There's lots of the fight scenes are fun. It's like how their arms aren't ripped out of their sockets on that train is a testament to their grip.
In the tunnel, crazy.
It's great. Max being arrested is hilarious. Then the Jean Reno in the helicopter being attached to the train, so he must fly down the tunnel, is glorious.
It's glorious. So fun. It's one of those things. I forget, was it maybe William Goldman who said, you know, it doesn't matter how terrible the ending is. As if the rest of the film has been great, the ending can be as stupid as possible and people will just be like, yep, that's fine. Yeah. I have enjoyed all of this up till now. This can be as dumb as you like. And it is stupid. Like it is bona fide stupid. Like the propeller blade almost cutting Tom Cruise's head, just stopping at the last minute. Like, come on, this is dumb. But it's just... like we've gone with it all up till now, and it's like, yeah, well, that's fine.
yeah. Why would we? Why would we suddenly say that's too much?
Yeah. There's no too much in this film.
It's a movie of excess, and that's great.
Yeah.
And you know, the fact is, he blows up the villains with exploding chewing gum, which we saw early on, and that's what he used to get rid of the lobster tank.
Yes. And, Emilio Estevez's red light, green light.
Far out. How many times does Ethan Hunt have to remember to just, no, it's okay to have stinky breath. Don't go for the chewing gum in the off chance.
How much was chewy was in that packet?
Yeah, I know. He must have had a six pack. It was fantastic. So where does this ending rate in the Mission Impossible universe?
The ending?
Yeah, where do you rate it as your favourites?
Look, I don't think it's great because it gets a bit silly, but then there are even stupider ones coming up. So look, I'm somewhere in the middle. Like it's still fun and silly and exciting. It's just the stupid propeller blades at the end are just like, it's one step too far.
yeah, it really is. But
the music cues are a little bit much when it's just like when he jumps onto the thing and it's like, what is this music cue? And then it's like straight into the Mission Impossible theme. I'm like, you're pushing your luck there, mate.
Yeah. What are you doing? It's pretty funny. All right. Well, I've got some segments to close it up with. So segment, this is from our Space Podyssey series. Who and how, which character do you think you would be and how would you react in their place?
Oh, look, I have to say I would almost definitely be Henry Zerny.
Yeah.
Because I'm very good at being an officious asshole who gets the wrong end of every stick.
Yeah.
And does vengeful things like, well, arrest his mum, put her on drug charges. Just going up to someone's like, does anyone else know about this? Okay, let's pretend.
let's keep going. We'll be fine.
So I would definitely be Henry Zerny.
I reckon I'd be one of the IMF team in the other team, but I'm in the restaurant, and when he blows up the lobster tank, I'm the one trying to save all the lobsters that are...
Put them back in the water.
Yeah. That's how I'd feel.
It'll be like that episode of the Simpsons where Bart gets a new bigger brother and... And Homer throws like starfish at him at like, you know, ninja stars, and he carefully puts them back in a tank, and then they get eaten by a shark.
That sounds about my.
You put all the lobsters back in, and then a really big groper just comes.
So sorry, guys. So the segment Zero Charisma. I feel like I know where you're going to go. Who do you think has zero charisma?
Claire. I mean, I think she has mistaken her pout for a personality, a poutonality.
Right. Yeah.
Like there's just nothing there. Like, as I said, she could have been a chair.
Yeah.
A really attractive chair, but a chair.
Yeah. So I totally agree. And the next segment, better or worse, these have kind of run in together for me. So I agree with you that Claire is a bit one-off. I would improve this movie by just keeping Kristen Scott Thomas in the Claire role.
I had I had the exact same thing. Swap her for Kristen Scott Thomas. Like, she is prickly and alive and exciting. Yes. And also then not having, you know, because she dies in this film, I kept wanting her to, you know, somehow be the character she is in Slow Horses. Like, this is just early in her career.
Yes. Yes. But also, you know, so there's kind of an implication that, you know, maybe Ethan and Claire have a moment, you know.
Even from the beginning when he's like checking that she's all right at the start in that first mission. And you're like, what is this about? Like, why do you care? Like, she's pretending to be dead.
And none of it works. But no. Kristen Scott Thomas, like, they have that, like, I would have bought that more. You know,
even though he had the old man makeup on, like, it looked like they were going to do it.
it looked like it was going to happen, which would have fitted in with her dating Jim Phelps.
Yes.
Sorry, can you put the mask back on? I'd like you to be like my husband.
Yes, I would have believed Kristen Scott Thomas was going out with Jim Phelps.
Yeah.
You know, it would have a very Catherine Zeta-Jones, Michael Douglas vibe.
Yeah. No, but and that's something that we know happened in the real world, and so I can relate to it in the movie.
So,
next segment, Top Gun Maverick emotional scale. I've got to say, his grief at his team being murdered isn't memorable.
No, he doesn't have much there.
and you know, his Top Gun Maverick emotional scale is ultimate cruise. So
yeah,
this is
I cried four times, I'm telling you. I kept crying in that movie every time.
Yeah.
What were you thinking? You told me not to think. It's so good.
We have the segment Vanilla Sky Sexual Chemistry Award. And I feel like we've already discussed that he doesn't have any sexual chemistry with Emmanuel Beard. And
I also think, like, writing-wise, that was a terrible mistake. Like, I think it's scripted badly in that they're trying, you know, it's even Phelps's kind of says, oh, I knew she'd be able to turn you. It's like, we never saw it. Like, he never once looked like he wanted to hump that chair.
No.
Like, and she's not really trying it on with him at any point. Like, it's almost like she's scared of him. I just felt like it was a really, like, there was no scene kind of scripted for them to have any kind of frisson. I think it was maybe the script writers in their heads, you know, when you're writing a script, you cast whoever you feel like it, you know, maybe Tom Cruise wasn't cast at this point and they just had some real life couple, you know, like Brad and Angelina when they did Mr. and Mrs. Smith. They're like, oh, it'll be fine because they'll be together. Yeah. You know, what I think Stanley Kubrick thought he was getting with Tom and Nicole. you know, some real life couple, you know, Ally McGraw and Steve McQueen and the getaway. You know, that kind of, or even like, you know, actors can do it. George Clooney and Jennifer Lopez and Out of Sight. Like, it's there. Like, it is steaming. And maybe the writers just assumed that they would get a Clooney Lopez type arrangement and instead they got Tom Cruise. Like it would have been better if they'd cast a mirror as her because he probably would have had quite a lot of chemistry.
Right. Might have been too much. Might have gotten an R rating. Well, to be honest, I think he has more chemistry with the floppy disk in his mouth.
Oh, yeah.
No, I do think he does appear to genuinely like Ving Rhames' Luther. Like, that's about the only time that he comes across as a normal human being, and I reckon that's why Rhames gets brought back.
Yeah, and also, like, even right at the end when they're having beers together, you're like, are they going to make out?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm so confused. He looks like they genuinely get along.
Yeah.
So I brought over this segment from Space Podyssey. Where are we now? Mm. How close are we to the technology in the film? Now, I'm just going to warn you, this is going to go dark because what I looked up and what I got was not what I was expecting. But here we go. In 2009, a Ukrainian chemistry student was killed chewing explosive bubble gum that blew off half of his face. The student mistook the powder for the citric acid he often added to increase his chewing gum's sour taste. The police spokesperson said, even some of our seasoned officers who have seen a thing or two, even they were pretty badly shaken up by what they found. In brighter news, so that's that was what I was like, oh, I wonder if exploding chewing gum exists, and unfortunately for one person, it did. And he did exactly what I was worried that Ethan Hunt might do if he was going in for a meeting.
I'm a bit pongy. I might have something. Don't.
Yeah. In brighter news, because I felt like that was too dark, a pack of the exploding gum from the movie was sold for £400 back in 2017, oh, wow, which is roughly 700 Australian or 491 American dollars. So you could have owned that. That'd be fun.
Could have had a pack of red light, green light.
Yeah. I've got, we'll sum it up in a sec, but I've got some squid bits for you.
Before you move on, can I just say, as far as where are we now with the technology? One of my favorite moments in the film was very early on when they're doing the operation at the reception, and Tom Cruise has got he's doing the funny accent and he's got the old man makeup on, and Jim Phelps is watching it all on TV on a computer screen, and I'm like, this is the shittest Zoom meeting anyone's ever hosted.
Yeah.
And everyone's name is in capital letters. It was hurting me.
Yeah. Everyone stopped yelling. Why is everyone yelling?
But it's just like everyone like wandering around. I'm like, oh man, I have been in Zoom meetings where people wander around on their phones, and like it only takes more than one person to be doing it for it to give you kind of motion sickness.
Yeah,
like when you see two different screens moving and you're like, oh no, this Zoom meeting is terrible. I can't watch it.
Yeah. This is too much. Jim Phelps. This is what happens when you become corrupt. It doesn't bother you. You're fine. He's not really.
That should have been our first indicator.
Yeah.
He was more than fine to watch a Zoom meeting with 14 people all carrying their phones around.
Oh, man. So funny. So originally, Mission Impossible was an American espionage TV series that aired on CBS from 1966 to 1973, and the show covered a small covert team of secret government agents known as the Impossible Missions Force. Did you watch it on TV as a kid?
Once or twice. It wasn't like a huge. It wasn't like an appointment viewing.
No, I feel like it was on during the day, and maybe I saw it if I was homesick or something like that.
I preferred the streets of San Francisco, to be honest.
So did I. I love those streets. Yeah, that was great. I'm surprised I haven't brought that back.
I know. Carl Malden and Michael Douglas. It's perfect.
Yeah. I had a lot of love for Michael Douglas from that film.
Yeah.
From that series.
Such a great show.
Yeah.
Just such a great show.
So in the TV series, they would use sophisticated tactics to take on the Iron Curtain, third world dictators, corrupt industrialists and crime lords, etc. And this team worked as an independent agency of the United States government. In season one, Dan Briggs, played by Stephen Hill, would recruit agents for the different missions, but pretty much recruited the same people. And they so it was always, better get a team together. And it was always the same team. So it was Barbara Bain as Cinnamon Carter, who was a top fashion model and actress. You had Martin Landau as a noted actor, makeup artist, escape artist, magician, and a man of a million faces, and he was called Roland Hand. G'day. There was the character. We've got Barney Colliers. He was played by Greg Morris, a mechanical and electronics genius. And finally, Willie Armitage, played by Peter Lupus, who was the world record holding weightlifter.
Yep.
Like, what a team.
What a team.
This feels more like the Fantastic Four than it does. Like, it's so random, you know? So Stephen Hill only lasted the first season. As an Orthodox Jew, he had to leave on Fridays at 4 p.m. to be home before sundown and was not available until after dark the next day. The production schedule made it difficult to progress, and when Hill began refusing to do certain stunts, they decided to move on. Several writers took turns at working on this script. David Koepp and Robert Towne are credited, but both writers were unhappy with having to make their final script fit around the action scenes that De Palma and Cruise planned. So, so you must have these big action scenes, and then, but I think that's how Marvel works, isn't it? They have the big action scenes, and then they fill in the gaps.
Yeah, like the it's just like do what you're told, write a script.
Yeah.
Make it work.
The glass-walled restaurant was Cruise's idea, but he had to do the stunt himself because De Palma felt the stunt double didn't look convincing enough. And I reckon you're right. This is where it goes fucking...
Yeah.
If I can do this, I can fly into space.
I can do anything. Yeah. I can hold onto the side of a plane as it takes off. Gary keeps sending me, like, you know, every now and again you'll see like an Instagram of like a bird on the wing of a plane and then it just zoops off. Or the other day it was like a cicada just sitting in the window, just like hanging on for ages. And then he always sends it to me and just writes, Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise wouldn't fly off. He holds on for dear life.
Yeah.
So funny. The French rail operators initially refused permission to use the high-speed TGV in the climax.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Alan Silvestri was fired as the composer during post-production and replaced with Danny Elfman.
Oh, wow.
The original series cast refused to be in the movie when they discovered the plan to kill off the team in the first half hour and revealed that Jim Phelps was now the antagonist of the film.
So those roles were all meant to be the originals, right?
I think so, yeah. So Martin Landau said it was basically an action adventure movie and not mission. The ideal mission was getting in and getting out without anyone knowing we were there. So the whole texture changed. Why volunteer to essentially have our characters commit suicide? I passed on it and the script wasn't that good either. Greg,
it's the writer of Chinatown. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Well, he wasn't happy with it either. So, you know, maybe.
No, I know.
Greg Morris, who played Barney Collier in the original series, was so disgusted with the film's treatment of Phelps' character that he left the theater before the film ended.
And
Peter Graves also disliked how Phelps was portrayed. There was initially a sophisticated opening sequence that introduced a love triangle between Phelps, Claire, and Hunt, but George Lucas said they should remove it because it takes the audience out of the genre.
Yeah. George Lucas, for once, having a good idea.
Wow. Let's just enjoy this moment for what it says. But I think he's right. But then it's like they should have... they should have taken it all out because then it doesn't make those. I think the stuff that happens later is from previous drafts.
Yeah. Like there's obviously meant to be something going on between them, but it just, there's nothing. There's nothing between them.
Yeah. And you said no one's going to believe Ethan Hunt would bang a chair.
He'll get splinters.
He'll get splinters. You know how he feels.
That's his biggest stunt to date.
Yeah.
He's risking splinters by fucking a chair.
Yeah. Finally, Cruise doing
it. I'll do it for real.
Wanted.
I'm Tom Cruise.
Yeah. No stuntman, please. So Apple Inc. invested $15 million into promotion linked to the film, which included a game, print ads, and a television spot featuring scenes from the TV show turned into the feature film, along with placement of Apple personal computers in the movie. This was because Apple was attempting to improve their image after posting a $740 million loss in its fiscal second quarter.
Oh, wow.
That's weird, isn't it?
I know, it's weird to think of Apple struggling. I remember back then. That was before the... candy-coloured IMAX.
Yes, right. And is that before the David Fincher adverts and things like that? Yeah. Promotion of the film in Germany was complicated due to their ban of Scientologists from joining the state civil service. The Church of Scientology responded that they hadn't invested in the film and that it was part of a pattern of religious discrimination by German authorities. And finally, there were rumors that De Palma and Cruise didn't get along, fueled by De Palma when he excused himself at the last moment from scheduled media interviews before the film's theatrical release.
Oh, dear.
Deary me. All the drama.
So it's all second unit.
Yeah. Well, I feel like he made it, and then he was like, that is enough. But I wonder if that ends up being a good thing for a while there, because it means it changes up for a while and makes it a, you know, for a while there, it's a director's delight. So
yeah, it's like whatever the director wants, like they get, and then recently it's just been the Christopher McQuarrie show.
Yeah, it really has. The Cruise Whisperer. He seems to be.
The Cruise Whisperer. Yeah. They get along so well. They seem to be best mates.
Right. Just him and Cruise and, you know, what's his name from Spaced? Who got
Simon
ripped?
Pegg.
Simon Pegg. You know what? It just makes no sense because I thought of Simon Pegg and I couldn't think of his name because the first thing I thought of was the first time I saw him with his shirt off and he was ripped and it was like good on you. But
here's a name drop. My sixth ever gig was supporting Simon Pegg at The Last Laugh.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Was it a fun gig?
It was great.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was organized by Ali Catterick, I think, at the time.
Oh, yeah, right. Yes. Yeah. Helier and I got to interview Pegg and Frost and also Edgar Wright. And
oh, fun.
That was for the third of the Cornetto films, World's End.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
It was a very funny chat because we were convinced that the lead character was based on Fleety. And it wasn't, it was someone else.
Tragically, there are Fleeties everywhere.
Yeah.
Every comedy clique has its own Fleety.
Yeah. No, turns out it was Matt King. Anyway, just remember that when you're watching it. Anyway, our final segment, sum it up. What does this movie mean to you, Adam?
This is, you know, I love an espionage film. I love a big action film. I love a Tom Cruise film. And I love a Brian De Palma film. And this does not disappoint me in any of those areas. Like, it's all of those things. I absolutely adored it. I feel like it's nearly perfect as a Mission Impossible film, which is weird to say. You'd think the first one would be perfect and then it would be diminishing returns. But I think there's a few, you know, there's characters who are pouts and chairs. And there's just like too much expectations of our suspension of disbelief at the climax. It's almost perfect. So I think for me, it's a 4 out of 5.
Okay. Look, I reckon great work by De Palma, solid action, good thrills, not Cruise at his best. And I think I think it's not the fault of the film, but his insane stunts in the future have reflected badly on this film, but that's not fair to this film.
Yeah.
Because
they didn't know that in the future he would be hanging off the side of a plane.
Of a fucking plane. Yeah, exactly. Trying to kill Henry Cavill by flying a helicopter into a mountain. So I reckon this was great, and I'm going to give this 3.5 Tom Cruise jaw flexes out of 5.
Oh, there you go.
So next up is Mission Impossible 2, and directed by John Woo.
John Woo. With Tanduy Newton in it?
Yes. And admission time, the only one I've never seen. So I'm really excited.
And it's filmed predominantly in Sydney.
Yeah.
So we could go on a tour of the set pieces.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait. Can't wait to step out into Sydney.
Yeah, written by the guys who had been writing Star Trek The Next Generation and for the previous 7 years and wrote the first two Next Generation movies.
Yep.
It's an interesting film. Is it Dougray Scott who's in it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, because I think he was stuck filming this because it kept going into long and they kept couldn't doing do Wolverine? Reshoots and reshoots. Yeah, and he couldn't do Wolverine and then... Yeah. Hugh Jackman got Wolverine, so
yeah,
I'm looking forward to this. This is going to be fun.
Another thing to be thankful to Tom Cruise for. Thank you. because you inadvertently gave us Logan, and I'll always be grateful for that.
Oh, Logan's such a great film.
All right, thanks, Adam.
Thanks, Josie.
Thank you to Adam for joining me today. We've already recorded the second episode, and that will be coming to you in a few weeks. And look, I'd never seen that one. That was the only one I'd never seen. Everyone had warned me, you don't need to see it. Everyone said to me, it's not very good. And then I watched it, and they were right. If anything, by saying it wasn't very good, they talked it up. But the podcast Adam and I recorded is spectacular. It's so much fun. And in a way, thank goodness for the podcast, right? I think that's what got me through that movie. But anyway, that'll come, I reckon, sometime towards the end of March. But our next Big Squid episode drops on Thursday and welcomes musician Imogen Clark. I've never had her on the podcast before. This is like the first time that we'd really properly hung out, and she's great. She's talking about her career. She's talking about her latest music. And we also discuss our favorite albums from 2022 and also the listeners' suggestions. So you may have already heard the 2022 favorite movies episode with Alexi Toliopoulos. And then last week we had the favorite TV shows with Adam Richard. And this week it's all about music. And last year I put it out to my Patreon subscribers to suggest to me what they've been listening to, and we discussed that on the podcast. So keep an eye and an ear out for that on Thursday. A big thank you to our Patreon subscriber for the episode, Michaela. Thank you for contributing to this podcast and helping us make these episodes happen. If you'd like to join our Patreon and have access to extra podcasts, bigger discounts to live events, scripts, works in progress, etc., head to patreon.com/JustinHamilton to find a tier that suits you. As I said earlier, all money goes back into this podcast because it takes quite a bit of coin to get this out there. So if you'd like to subscribe, that's where your money will go. It will go to the professionalism or semi-professionalism of this podcast. And one last reminder for Adelaide friends, remember, use the Big Squid Discount Podcast when purchasing tickets to my Adelaide Fringe show that starts next week. Head to bigsquidpod.com and the gigs page will give you all the details. Now, you've probably listened to this podcast in the past, but if you haven't, usually just about every episode finishes with a quote, just about. And I figured for our Mission Impossible episodes, I will be finishing with Tom Cruise quotes. Just Tom Cruise. That's right. All Tom, all the time. Or should that be all Tom, all the Tom? I don't know. Anyway, I found a bunch of Tom Cruise quotes and I loved all of them. And I figure, let's just finish with him. So today's quote is, I go without sleep. I just go hard. Oh, man. It is genuinely the best. Thank you so much for listening. Until then.
Of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.